Hello, welcome to Books in the Biz, a podcast that looks at both the financial and operational sides of success. Please welcome our hosts, Dan Paulson and Richard Veltre. Dan is the CEO of Envision Development International, and he works with leaders to increase sales and profits through great cultures with solid operations. Rich is CEO of the Veltre Group and a financial strategist working with companies to manage their money more effectively. Now on to the podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of Books in the Biz. Rich, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing great, and I have my go juice, so I'm good to go.
There you go. He's got his caffeine. Wonderful. And as of the recording of this, you are also kind of getting through that latter half of tax time, so I'm sure you are breathing a sigh of relief there as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The joys of accounting. Other good news at the time of this recording is we're seeing a slight drop in interest rates. So we dropped a quarter of a point, didn't we?
Yes, we did. They announced it yesterday, and the indicators are that that is one of more to come, but we can only do that and hope that every month. We hope that next month they do it again or whatever they plan to do, but indicator was it's time to bring them back down.
Yep. So we'll get a little bit closer to hopefully something making stuff more affordable, but we'll actually see if that happens or not. So we were talking earlier before this recording about what's kind of going on, especially when it comes to like succession planning. And I think we both got some stories to tell about here's what happens when you say, I'm going to sell this thing tomorrow. And you don't do any prep work to get the company prepared to either be passed on to employees or sold on private market or PE or any of those things. And it can turn out to be a rather costly situation for you, can it?
Absolutely. I was working recently with a company that was buying another company out of bankruptcy, but they were doing their due diligence and, you know, the offer on the table was a certain dollar amount. And the first thing that they realized as they were going through it was there was a sales tax liability that was not quite quantified, wasn't filed. And it became a real back and forth conversation over how am I paying this full value and how am I covered for the fact that I might get, I might have to pay that liability. And they wanted to figure that out and come up with the reason. And at the end of the day, they wound up paying, I believe, less than what they originally said they were going to pay because there was this mystery of the liability there. So, I mean, that was a very recent case, like within the last 2 weeks, you know, that it came up. And that's just one of many. I mean, we had one that we were selling a we were selling a big company to a private equity firm that was spending hundreds of millions of dollars to buy the firm. And sales tax again became the issue because somebody looked at the compliance and said, okay, everything's filed. But they, you know, there was a pretty quick and pretty accurate, you know, assessment of the fact that they were short on what they paid 1 year because it came down to Indiana, I think. Indiana taxes the capital improvements. And they had done a build out on a building and there was a, you know, a lot of personal property put in that wound up being sales taxable and they had not paid the use tax, which use tax just means that you pay it rather than the contractor or whoever you paid would collect it and pay it. Use tax is really the same thing. It's just that if you paid it, but they didn't collect it, you still have a responsibility to submit it. So use tax was not provided and therefore there was a big liability that now they had to figure out how to fit that into the deal. And it changed the amount of money that the owners were going to get in the sale. So, you know, these are types of things that come up. And in our case, both of those cases, we were doing due diligence because the deal was on the table. this was something that could have been done in advance and planned for and mitigated. And then it wouldn't have been something that comes up at the deal table and everybody says, well, we're not going to pay that much money for it. So, you know, when we're talking to our sellers, you know, we're essentially essentially saying to them, look, be prepared. There are things out there that could show up. Maybe you want to do some advanced planning. Maybe you want to do a little bit of due diligence, you know, mm-hmm. of your own ahead of time, you know, so you kind of know the skeletons that are in the closet. Can you mitigate them? Can you not? Do you look like a, you know, a rock star if you're going to, you know, come out and say, look, I got this thing I got to deal with. And I'm bringing it up to the table. I mean, wow, talk about, you know, being the rock star seller of a company in that you're actually showing someone, here's a skeleton, you know, let's work it out right away so we don't have to impede the deal.
Right.
You know, so, you know, these are some of the things that, you know, we want to bring up to people and say, look, if you're trying to sell, these are the types of things that can come up and you're trying to sell everything where you list it on Friday and you get your money by Monday. If there's skeletons there, you know, you're not going to ever come close to that, you know, anyway. So prepare.
Yeah. Well, if you can turn a business that quick in a couple of days, please let me know how you do that. Because it seems to be a lot more work than that. You know, I tend to look at things from more of the operation side of things. So a lot of things that I hear or get keyed into are, okay, what internally isn't built, designed, systematized, documented, and who's doing what? Because there's actually some fairly decent sized organizations, I'll say organizations, you know, 40, 50 people in them, where there are still a lot of functions that have to flow through the business owner. And when the business owner says, look, I'm done, sell this thing tomorrow, or, you know, within the next year, however long it takes, I find that once you start breaking down, again, who's doing what, how much are they doing, who needs to approve, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, there's a lot of issues that aren't documented down. So this is coming from the seller side going, get this thing off my plate, or, you know, I want to retire, I want to collect my dollars and go. And you start talking to them about pricing, you know, what they think their business is worth, and they'll give you a number. And sometimes it's realistic. Other times they're asking for pie in the sky numbers and aren't even sure, you know, where they got that number out of their head. I think most people look at, you know, what am I selling each year, and is that revenue equate to a buy number for somebody else? Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't, just based on the way the multiples break down. But what I continually see is, okay, I have, you know, I have a salesperson, but the primary salesperson is actually the business owner, or there are people that handle certain operational things, but everything has to flow through that business owner. Finance, same thing. He controls who spends the money, how they spend the money, what they spend the money on. So you have people doing tasks for the owner, but the owner having final say and direction in everything. And I find that they rarely communicate their thought process to anyone else. So nobody else really understands, well, why did you make this decision on this, but not on that? Because, you know, they're essentially doing a task. They're not paid to think on, should I ask that question or not? So then you get towards the end of the discussion when they're going to sell the business. And then they come back with a number. The buyer comes back with a number that is significantly lower than what the seller thinks is worth. Now, that, again, could be for a number of reasons. Did they do their own due diligence in coming up with an accurate number, or did they just pull a number out of the sky that they would love to get but have no reason why? But in most cases, what I find is it really boils down to the owner didn't do their homework and didn't build their systems in place so that they could walk away from the business without a hitch. You know, we've talked about this in the past. Usually the owner leaves and they have to replace the owner with 3 to 4 other people of pretty significant salaries and benefits in order to backfill what that owner was doing. And the owner always assumes, well, you can just hire one other person. They can do the same thing I did. It never works out that way. No. They have a different vested interest as an owner than an employee would. So to me, that's the other side of the equation. I agree with you 100%. There needs to be more understanding of the financials and how the financials impact the business. And you also have to look at how the operations as a whole is impacted by your departure. And I don't think most business owners understand that. And they're starting to find out the hard way now, because I think you and I have talked to a couple companies that they're like, if I could get out tomorrow, I would. And while that's a wonderful thought, A, it's going to take much longer than that. But B, are you going to get what you believe your company's worth, or are you going to be offered something that is substantially discounted because the buyer sees that they have to do a bunch of work to keep this company afloat after you leave?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a mismatch. And I think on that particular issue, I have come to really be much more reliant on the buyer's analysis than on the seller's analysis. Because the buyer asks the key questions that the seller doesn't necessarily want to hear or get the answer to.
Right.
Because you're right. If you have to hire three or four people, then you're going to decrease the amount of money you're willing to pay, because you have to pay those people after you make the purchase.
Right.
So, you know, that's a legitimate adjustment of what they're going to, you know, calculate into your purchase price. So I'm much more keen now after going through a dozen plus of the last deals where someone really sat down and did the workflow of, you know, this is what the people are actually doing. Mm-hmm. We have to basically hire people to replace that. And we calculate that into our number, our adjusted EBITDA, which becomes the multiplier becomes, you know, your purchase price. Right. So they know they're going to make less because they got to hire three more people.
Right. So in your opinion, which is better? Do you sell the company at a discounted rate and not worry about fixing all the things that you're going to fix? Or is it better to kind of put those systems in place ahead of time, hopefully to maximize the value?
I think there's two factors in that. Number one is your timing. Mm-hmm. Number two is your owner, your current owner. You know, if the current owner just wants out, then maybe the conversation is, if you just want out, this is what they're going to adjust. Be prepared for that. If you accept that number, you're good to go. We don't have to do the adjustment. You right. just basically become, as I talked about before, you become the rock star seller, because you're basically saying, look, I know there's a workflow problem right here. You're going to ding me for it. I've already accepted that. I'm already dinging myself for that. So I know my price is going to be lower because I'm not going to do the work before you come in. Or if you take our advice and you start early, you have the option that you can put those dollars in your pocket, because you can realize that this is a problem, address the problem, change the workflows to include a couple of key people who can do the things that you want them to do, train them so they do it your way. And then that might take you 2 years,
right?
You know, to get somebody up to speed, to get somebody really running to the point where you don't have to be in the office all the time, because that person's doing what you already would have done. So at that point, when somebody comes in and says, well, we're going to ding you because you don't have a person. Yes, I do. He's right over here. Let me introduce you. Now you're yep. basically saying, I've already taken care of that problem. I've already taken a step back. That adjustment is less. So very much so a piece that, you know, can be addressed ahead of time. So that's why I say it has to be timing. And is your owner willing to actually relinquish in a 2 year period, 3 year period, whatever it takes, depends on what it is. So that's my thought pattern on that one.
Yeah. And kind of like you said, we've been giving that advice for a while. I would also, you know, make a similar case for why you should do it early, because you stand to profit in multiple ways. One, freedom of time. Because if you're training somebody else how to do what you do, that's going to take work off your plate. Now, there's a process to that. As you mentioned, you know, it couple years at least to get somebody fully tuned into to how you do things and make sure they're doing it the way you would expect. The other benefit is you're making improvements to what we'll consider as an already successful business. So you stand to benefit a couple ways there: increase sales, increase profits. So not only have you freed up your time, you've also started generating more revenue and hopefully generating more profits on top of that, which now becomes even more attractive to a seller because it's not somebody who's just been sitting on their laurels and waiting their time out to sell their business. It's showing that there's still momentum for growth here, which I think is a huge advantage. And there are a certain group of buyers that are going to want to look for what I call turnkey businesses, which is they can just step in and take over because most of the work has already been taken care of. Now, there's another group of buyers, kind of similar to your two categories here. There's another group of buyers that will not be interested in that business because they want to buy the discount. They want to get things at pennies on the dollar because they're willing to accept that they know there's needed improvements, but they're also going to pay at a much lower rate than, say, a company that has all its ducks in a row and functions well and can operate without the owner being there. So I think those are definitely issues we need to consider when looking at that buying or selling phase, because there is a lot of work involved either way as you transition a business. The last thing, in my opinion, you want is to spend more time fighting over the nickels and dimes and you know, hashing out these issues when they're not addressed ahead of time. You know, from a financial side, how do you prevent those surprises? Because sometimes these surprises the owners don't even know about, correct?
Yeah, I think the big prevention factor is to bring someone in, shameless plug, like us.
like us. Keep so, plugging.
I mean, I think when you use somebody that's not you, okay, when you're the business owner, you have a certain set of eyes, right? You are basically looking at the same business you've been looking at for a very, very long time. Coming from the accounting world, I can tell you a dozen times when we used to do things more on paper, you'd have a whole stack of numbers and you could go through and add them up every single time and still come up with a wrong answer. And when you go back and you keep looking at it, you do it again.
Right.
You don't find the miscued number. Because your mind is focused on the fact that you've done it over and over and over again. You just keep doing it the same way.
Right.
Now, you hand it off to someone else and they add up the numbers and suddenly they get the right answer. And it's because they haven't looked at it four times. They looked at it 100% fresh with no predisposed notion of this is how it's going to go. So they can get the answer right. So translate that to due diligence on your company. Let someone else come in and take a quick look at it. Even if it's not full on due diligence, you know, what are they going to ask for? What do you think that an outside buyer is going to ask for? What do you think their advisors are going to ask for? Because they may not be doing the due diligence themselves. They may hire an accounting firm that does it. So you want somebody who thinks like that. And that person could sit there and say, this is what we see. You know, this is a potential problem. Are you prepared for that? Should we pull these documents? Should we have them out already? You know, real estate market, if you're selling your house, you mm-hmm. know, who's to say that you shouldn't have a home inspection done on your own about your own house? You know,
actually, that's becoming a lot more common where the realtors will even say we should do a home inspection now. So we can lay out all the problems, decide what we're going to fix, and then decide what the pricing of the home is going to be from there.
Correct. So who's to say you shouldn't do that for your business?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Across the board audit, I think, is kind of a good way to look at it, where you've got somebody looking at all aspects of the business, not just the financial records, but actually getting into the details of the operational role as well. Mm-hmm. You know, you're never going to be a perfect. Well, I can't say never. You're rarely going to be in a perfect situation where somebody's going to come in and say, I want it just as is. It runs perfectly. Somebody's always going to want to negotiate with you because they believe they can do it better, or there's something that they want to do differently, and they're going to try to negotiate that out of the price. It gets to be a lot tougher argument, though, when you have a well-run business that is operated without just your control. And I think it becomes a good argument for you, just like doing the home inspection ahead of approaching any sellers. You know, the seller can come in and say, well, you know, the home, I don't like this or I don't like that. And you can show them the home inspection and you can say, well, here's what we fixed already. Here's what we're choosing not to fix. And here's how we priced the building. Now that's your choice to adjust it if you want or not. But, you know, to me, it's a better argument for the price that you're asking for. It's more justification. Yep. And, you know, some M&A companies will do some sort of breakdown. Usually, again, it's more around the financial side, looking at the balance sheets, looking at the P&Ls, and kind of from there determining, well, what can we add back in? You know, we've had Paul Curtis on a couple times talking about this. You know, so there's different things you can do there. But how many really look at the operational side? Or do, you know, the M&A guys go, well, you know, how do you think the business works? Oh, I think it works great. Okay. Shake their head and away they go. So a third party could be very helpful to this. And we've, you know, here's my turn for shameless self-promotion, shameless plugs. We have our 20 questions review, which is pretty basic, but also at a what I would call a basic rate. We have our full-on, I would say, business audit, where we go into much more detail and start digging into maybe those challenge areas or some of those issues that we know could be impactful to the sale of the company and to the overall operation of the business. So to me, there's a couple different options that we have. I don't know what other people have, but that might be something worth looking at if you're seriously considering selling, especially if it's a relatively short turn that you're looking to make on this. To me, it's even more helpful, honestly, if you're looking at that 3 to 5 year window that we talk about, because now you have time to make those improvements more so than if you got 6 months to a year, because some changes you're just not going to make. So then it's a, like you said, it's determination. If you want out now, you kind of have to give up some money to do that. And it's just good to know where those issues are. They're probably going to get flagged so you can be prepared for what the potential buyer is going to push back on.
Totally agree. And the other thing to think about too is, you know, we've talked about this in that there is a market effect on the buyers, you know, and it's happening right now, especially in the small business arena where interest rates were high, you know, as of yesterday, they seem to be showing that they might come down, which would be a great thing, I think, for people mm-hmm. who really want to make this transition. But as of right now, they're still high. And there's a lot of people out there who were looking at this as sort of the next career, that they were going to be buying up smaller businesses. And, you know, that would be a new career for the rest of their, you know, work time. And market effects have basically told people, you know, it's expensive. Mm-hmm. And they've moved things away from being able to use the resources and borrow the money they need to buy your business. So if they're running into those market effects, that's decreasing the number of people out there to be buyers, which everything in the world is supply and demand, right?
Right.
There's a lot of people trying to sell their business, a lot of supply. But if the buyer number goes down, it's going to decrease the, you know, availability of money. It's going to decrease the availability of buyers to buy your business unless you lower your price.
Right.
So there's market effects in play here. You know, there are a lot of businesses out there who want to make the transition, who are expected to make the transition. You know, the silver tsunami, et cetera, is being attacked, you know, by market conditions that would allow newcomers to come in and buy the business from you. So keep that in mind and understand that, you know, if this is something that you're going to be going through or it's something you want to go through, start early. Not only the things we talked about today, but the market effects are another one that basically will say, can I get out on Monday if I'm leaving on Friday? It's unlikely.
Yeah, we are definitely seeing that pattern. And if you just look at demographics, it should tell you right there that there are going to be fewer and fewer people to have an opportunity to purchase a business just based on population numbers. So you really do have to kind of be ready for what's to come and, you know, be prepared now instead of waiting until the future and then miss that opportunity. So we highly recommend that. Rich, If they need to get a hold of us to do either our 20 questions or our full-on audit, what's the best way for them to do that?
Best way to reach me is by email, rich@xcxo.net.
And the best way for me is dan@xcxo.net. Rich, as always, wonderful discussion. And I think we hit on some key points here. So till next week, have a good one.
All right, you too.
Want to boost your sales and profits, but need the talent to help you grow? XCXO is a one-of-a-kind platform to find skilled fractional executives to help develop your team into a high-performance powerhouse. Fractional leadership is a great choice when you consider the average executive-level candidate can cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars in salaries, benefits, and incentives. XCXO finds you the executive and utilizes their talents to build your team's experience, all for a fraction of the cost of a full-time C-suite leader. Contact XCXO today to fill the gaps in your leadership team. Visit xcxo.net to learn more.